I got 6 p.m. I'm going to call the Economic Development Committee meeting for Tuesday, December 6th, 2016. Got Alderman Funkhauser, Alderman Glissimo, Alderman Koch, present, and city staff. Citizens' comments?
No.
None? Hearing that, 1 minute for a correction approval for October 4th, 2016. Anything?
I run the fine.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? New business. Item 1, EDC 2016-54, building permit reports for September and October of 2016.
Okay. September, we had a 15 single-family detached, 12 build incentive program permits. Those are the one old ones. We had some commercial stuff, but most of that was just remodel and little addition things. September was a really busy month for us as far as permits goes. So then in October, we did 5 new residential homes total, 1 single family attached and 1 and 4 builds. I'm blanking on the number that actually brings us to.
Is it like 144 or something?
Yeah.
I was just looking it down.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to 137 at the end of the term of October. So.
Right.
Okay.
And nothing, just the single family homes are going crazy and a lot of smaller stuff for commercial-wise, nothing super major. Still, stuff's going on.
Good?
Yeah.
Move on to item 2, EDC 2016-55, building inspection reports for September and October 2016.
Okay. Pretty much the vast majority of these are all from the build program or from the single-family homes. So it's 399 inspections altogether for the month, which is pretty decent volume. So I think we're going to keep on being pretty busy through this winter time, it looks like, and we have a bunch more stuff coming in. So. And then October, we ended up doing 386 inspections. Just mostly all build stuff. A lot of this is, the vast majority of these inspections are all in Grand Reserve. So I expect that next year, this time, we'll have 70% of our inspections all be done in Grand Reserve, as long as Pulte starts selling out there and things happen. So
it's really taking off out there, Grand Reserve?
Yeah, they're by far our big seller right now in the community. I mean, Wyndham Ridge is keeping up, but I think those two are the right now they're the most economical spots to live in town, and they have, especially Grand Reserve has some. From what the homeowners tell me out there, they like the amenities, they like the pool, they like the neighborhood, and they like the fact that it's not, you know, it's not super busy and they're close to everything, so.
Yeah, that's good.
Right, we've got two pretty much confirmed developers that will land there, builders, and then a third one I think would approach us, but they don't have lots yet, but they're interested. So just because there's so much land there, there's different types of products that were in the annexation agreement, I really think that's where the majority of work will take place over the next few years.
Great. And those two that are confirmed, those are approximately 100 units?
Yeah.
Give or take.
So now, is Autumn Creek, it's pretty much done then? Is it finished out?
Finishing out.
They have 3 lots that are not under contract. So even though they have more lots to build on, those
some of the majority of single family homes is filled up. That's next behind Bernard's area.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. They only have 3 that are not under contract?
3 that are not under contract.
That's done.
Yeah, and then they
have... So my wife's best friend lives there, right behind her, there's an empty lot. I thought there were more, I guess.
No. On the surface, there are empty lots, but they are either under contract or they've been sold.
They're not on the market.
They're
anymore.
Not.
They've been taken off inventory. Yeah. Well, now, our builders in Grand Reserve, Pulte is going to be one of them.
Okay.
D.R. Horton is in there. And who is our... is that it that's building in there?
Only two.
Only two at the moment. We have another perspective.
We've got one more that... has a contract or is negotiating one?
No.
They met with us?
That is for Caledonia.
Yeah, it's Calanic and Caledonia.
Right. Okay. Yeah, they have one. I know that. Yes.
I thought there was another one.
There is, supposedly, prospectively, there is one. I know Tim Bermerset, the gentleman who owns TBS Concrete, owns 25 or 30 lots in one area there. And he told me the other day he had been talking to someone who looked to purchase at a builder, but he was kind of tight-lipped about who it was. And he just said they're not a national, but they are bigger. They're no one local, but they're bigger. So I don't know who that is. That may be the third person.
Excellent. Nothing else. We'll go on to item three. EDC 2016-56 property maintenance reports for September and October 2016.
Okay. In September, we, Ted, you heard quite a few cases. Vast majority of them were just leftover things from weeds and grass and whatnot, and discharging a fence in Fremont. That was...
That's the one I was going to ask about. What was the discharge?
That was the best we could do at the time, and what happened is the gentleman that lives there, him and his wife, they had a birthday party for his son. His son, he told his son to take the garbage out. Well, his son decided, he's 14, decided not to take it to the garbage can, but throw it over his fence. So when it went to the neighboring lady's fence, she rebagged it, thinking someone would come grab it, and no one did. Then she called us, and we went over and looked at it, and we actually went through the trash and found receipts and paperwork for the homeowner at 401 and wrote them a citation. But apparently, we've gone through the whole process of amending our ordinances so that we can actually cite an offense like this. It was a lot of work to not be able to actually give judgment, but at least it
pointed out.
It fixed it, and it pointed out some shortcomings we had in our ordinances that we can actually correct, which going forward is a good thing.
Good.
And that was September, and then in October, not a ton, just you know, the non-stormwater discharge and motor vehicles. The non-stormwater discharge was someone discharging over a sidewalk, yeah. So it just caused an ice, concern about an ice issue. So we went out and addressed that, and supposedly it's not going to happen anymore, but we're still checking it once in a while here.
Okay.
Just an update on the Nicholson property in the downtown. We did have an open bid on it that closed last month. We did not have any bids on the property, so I think I had given everybody a brief update that we had contacted vendors directly to give us a quote. One came back at significantly higher than what our judgment amount was, and then we did get another one that came in like a week later for much less than the budget amount, but we're calling references, and it's not really a large company or one that has a great history of doing large organized projects with municipalities that might result in litigation. So we're weighing our options. The next step, though, is we're still issuing tickets. So if we get through the process again, get in front of an adjudicator and nothing is done, then basically we would go in with a higher budget amount, obviously, for authorization. So when we spoke to the attorney, she didn't suggest that we move forward with the higher vendor of the two, because that might result in some issues through the adjudication system. She said even if we wanted to pay for the overage, we might not be able to do that. So she suggested that we basically just recite. We're in the winter anyway, so we're still lined up for a spring start, assuming nothing gets fixed between now and then.
Chris? Okay. One's over there on the phone, so I'll skip number four and we'll go to number five. EDC 2016-58 meeting schedule for 2017. It's in there. I think there's two that are going to be on Wednesdays. I remember reading it right.
4th of July and Election Day.
Yeah.
I'll be done.
You don't care.
Do whatever you want to do.
So. Okay. Should we go on to the old business one?
Like high school.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
I know.
She did say I could plug her.
You're high in the oven tonight. That's why
she said she'd get here.
All right. Well, do we? Item number four, EDC 2016-57 Economic Development Report. And Lynn's right here.
Does Lynn want to be in on this discussion too?
Yeah. This is her report first. We're going to do it.
We're going to do her report and
yeah.
The.
Yeah,
she's going to jump off the call now. Hopefully she's landing some businesses.
She's on the phone with a grocery store. That's about to sign on for the South Side, so please give
Isn't
her.
Isn't there a grocery store?
Give her a few minutes.
No, not yet. Where?
There was.
That's the junior box on the north side.
No, that little. Isn't there one?
No. Dunkin'
Donuts.
No. Dunkin'
Donuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Milk and Donuts.
Food?
Yeah.
Dunkin' Donuts.
That's a grocery store.
No. I guess it's
if you're a diabetic.
No, I thought there was something else down there that I saw it.
You're thinking of the Green Valley Market?
Yeah.
That's north side.
Yeah, that's all
right. It's an old chocolate shop place.
Oh,
yeah.
Why did I think that was on the south side?
Yeah, it's up there. By Dewey Shoes or whatever.
She's like a delivery business. Right. She's got like one day open.
Yes. So, I'm sorry. I'm obviously on this other call, and this is like, I've been on this call for now 15 minutes, so they're just talking amongst themselves. So, downtown, obviously, you know, Minor Threat's getting ready to open the 1836 Divisions and Provisions and Drink Lab. And then I actually have two other developers that are looking at properties in the downtown to do other projects, multi-use, multi-dimensional projects. Also, it's Hanna Design Group is the company that has been engaged by Rick Tollefson. They're out of Schaumburg, and they're doing a feasibility study currently on the bank building. So the name of the company is Hanna Design Group, so we might hear about them. And it started with an H. I couldn't remember the name of it the other day. So that's moving forward as far as looking to see what the potential of what might go at the property at 47 and Van Hemmen. So Dunkin's getting ready to open, and the gas station...
I'm sorry, but is there a feasibility study for something that Rick is looking to do or for him to be able to market it for others to be able to do?
For him to do it.
For him to do it.
Yes,
okay.
For him to do it.
Okay.
He would like to have an opportunity to try to see what he can do first.
Okay.
And then if it doesn't work, that it's going to work for him to do it, then...
he would be open to other suggestions.
Other suggestions or selling of the property or whatever it might be. But this is like the first step. So having them engage this company, I think, was a very good step moving forward. So, and then Dunkin' is open shortly, I would think. Again, a grocery store, I've got it out to another group of people. I still keep casting the nets to see who we can get that may be interested. And... and then that property at 47 and 71 that was one time the townhome piece, and now it's has business on it. And Christy and I met with the gentleman that has it, and he's exploring different things that could be done with that property. Regarding Kendall Crossing, that's the theater property. Sometimes I still refer to it as countryside because then people know what it is. Because if I say Kendall Crossing, people think Kendall Marketplace. So.
Yeah.
There is going to be, in the spring, there will be construction of a new 6,000 square foot multi-tenant building on the site. And 3/4 of the building is leased. And there will be about 1,500 square feet that will be available for lease.
What kind of use? Is it office or retail? Or?
It is a combination of office and retail.
Okay.
And then the last 1,500 will hopefully be a small retail shop. And then, I really think that once they get started on it, that list 1,500 will go right away, too, because I think that people are looking for something to be there. So, and then there's also multiple other people that are looking at the site as well. So it's an exciting time, and I think if the weather holds out, if we get lucky and have a winter like we had last year, we might actually end up, you know, getting in the ground as quickly as possible. So
I think that doing the roads in countryside helped a lot because people didn't want to drive through those potholes to get to that property.
Yeah.
Which
so,
lot is that going to be on? The central lot or the west lot?
It's near the funeral home.
Okay. So
back to back with the funeral home piece.
Okay.
And then Kendall Marketplace. So the junior box has signed off. We're getting close to an announcement because there are some people in the group that feel like they're ready for announcement and some people that feel that they're not ready for announcement. The architect is actually designing modifications to the building at this time. It is where Malcolm has been engaged to do the work out of Pope Brook. They are the architects, I actually met with them last week. And they feel that it is imminent. It's imminent. It's good news that it's imminent, but there's some people within that group
that say, yeah, go, and some people say, no, wait. So until everybody says, yeah, go, we can't go.
And it'll result in an expansion to the existing footprint of the building by about 1,000 square feet?
Yes, and the biggest change is that it's going to have a dock door that has to be added to the back of the building.
Sure.
So
it's a functional space that needs to be added.
I've spoken with them also about the requirements for the energy code and whatnot.
Excellent. Is it where Malcolm?
I believe so.
His name is Brett.
Yes.
So, okay. So
is that project all code compliant? Are they asking for any amendments, changes? It's just straight zoning, straight building code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Based on the allowances and their annexation agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And then also, I am working with Alex to create a new kind of campaign for Kendall Marketplace because of the outlets that nothing has happened on it yet. So he has, you know, he's working with CBRE. They're doing a great job. However, he's getting a little frustrated, so we're going to take a new kind of grassroots campaign where we're actually working on a letter that he is going to write to some of these people along with me saying, you know, just a little bit different approach, not coming from a real estate broker, kind of coming from the owner, and to kind of get to some of these decision makers and say, you know, hey, take a look at what's going on here. So I do think that timing is going to be very important. And when we announce this junior box, I think that's the time when this letter goes out. I think right now we're kind of spending this month kind of working on it, because if we go live with this at the beginning of the first of the year, that's when this letter should go out, because it could be part of the letter, you know, and say there's a new junior size box that's coming to Yorkville. And when I... It's coming to Kendall Marketplace. And when I say a junior box, I mean like PetSmart, Marshalls, that size of a user. So not a Famous Footwear, you know, more of a middle size. So, and then also, before you, in the very near future, right after the first year, you're going to see a assisted living memory care developer called Cedarhurst is going to come. They're doing a project right now in Naperville, and they have the property in 34 in Cannonball, which is the 6.7 acre parcel under contract, and they're going to be moving forward with their project. It's really a needed component to what we need here in Yorkville, because we do not have any memory care here. So it's assisted living, which is kind of like a nursing home, but like one step under, but then the memory care is like just a different component. It's just so needed. I think that there are, memory care is like exploding all over. The towns need them. So, and the building will be, I think, complementary to the, you know, those neighbors were.
Do they have a memory care over at the other place?
Heritage Woods?
No.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Because a lot of the places are making a memory care, like, annex across the street from where they're...
Well, what they're going to do is, what this group is going to do is they're going to have, it'll be one building, so all under one roof, but they're going to have two separate entrances. So
one part will be memory care, one part will be assisted living.
Yeah, it'll be almost like a wing.
Like a wing of it, yeah. But they'll have their own entry.
So basically, if someone moves in there in assisted living where they're kind of independent, they can just move on into the...
Right.
Yeah, that's really good.
And then the people that are in the memory care, if you're visiting someone like that, you don't have to go through the assisted living. They'll have like their own little entrance.
Yeah.
So, because previously that was going to be like a... restaurant or a gas station type thing. Do we have to make changes then for that type of property?
To the PUD amendment?
Not necessarily rezoning.
Because of PUD, it doesn't...
No, the underlying zoning was B1.
That's right. So it's acceptable.
So nursing
for that
is allowed to be B1, nursing care.
So what kind of a... What would you need?
Well, the land plan was attached to the PUD, so you'd have to change that. And then there may be some other obligations for the retail component.
What about the new comprehensive land plan? Is it different? Is it the same?
Actually, no. The comprehensive land plan shows that area for a transition that could be residential. So it kind of fits with this. And there's also language in there that says anywhere that we can fit in or transition land uses for aging care or housing is recommended.
Okay.
And this is a job creator. They will create over 40 jobs. So they have a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a good thing in that, you know, kind of dovetailing to the Kendall Marketplace thing, you think about trying to tell the tale of why some restaurants should come on those outlets. it's about jobs, it's about daytime population.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a nice little job creator. So the new junior box is going to create jobs. This project is going to create jobs. It's like literally...
Well, especially if it's housing. It's considered housing, even though they don't really leave there. Right. But they can. They still shop.
Yes.
I know.
Yes, they still shop. And maybe not the memory care people, but the assisted living people.
Right, but the assisted living people
do.
And
also that, you know, there's going to be 40 jobs that people come there every day to go to work.
Right.
It's a great real estate tax generator, too. I mean, it's going to get that property, you know, really generating some income for all of our taxing bodies and jobs, and it's a good thing. It's like a $10 million project.
No, that's awesome. I think that's really necessary because I know I have that in my family.
Would have been nice if the Route 34 trail would be on the north side to connect them over to
Canada. Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing, Chris, that now, because they get to the trail. I mean, because even the Heritage Woods, I'll see in the mornings and the evenings, I'll see people walking out of there and up through into Greenbrier and back. So
in assisted living, they're not allowed to leave, really. They're not allowed to leave.
So those people you're saying are kind of doing it on their own?
I don't know. They might not be from there because they're not allowed to leave. They have to.
Oh, they might be from
Prairie
Gardens.
It's a case by case basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they might
no.
be from Prairie Gardens.
Well, unless there's like more of a independent living there. If there's independent living there, then they can. But if it's assisted living, they can't.
I know my
just
grandpa
leave.
Had the inklet, so we had to run for it.
Yeah. As soon as they leave, that there's someone watching the door. They can't just leave by themselves.
It would make a run for it. The alarm.
We had someone fall and they had to call in.
They might have been coming from like somewhere else, but if they're assisted living, they can't just leave.
Dave Maskey took them.
Yeah,
he fell on the sidewalk.
Yeah, they can't. That's why they can't leave.
But I'm just saying that's how I knew. I didn't know I was called about it. So
my wife doesn't let me leave the house.
Well, I don't know. I don't blame her really so much. Why are you here?
And then I have a smaller site developer looking for like little infill pieces for some smaller things, and you know we're just exploring some different options. And although I'm directing him over to Kendall Marketplace too, so it's like I'm encouraging him to look at the projects, both Kendall Crossing and Kendall Marketplace, because some of the other smaller sites can be prohibitive in that there's a lot of development costs to the sites where we've got some things that are ready to go. So we're exploring lots of different things with him. Industrial use, I continue to chug along with my Aldermain Road project, and we're just getting ready to go have a visit with IRVDA in January on the project, and I have to keep it posted because they're not ready to tell the world yet who they are. So, but it's a very major project, and it's very full of infrastructure costs. Well, when I talk about site infrastructure, I mean water, sewer, gas, electric, and rail. Rail. Very expensive. So, we kind of keep chopping away with them. Regarding Justine, so wait. Can I go off the record?
No.
Dang. Afterwards, I'll go off the record.
We want to violate the open meeting.
So, Justine's project is moving along very nicely, and she will be going vertical in the spring. Absolutely. So.
Great.
Absolutely. So. I'll embellish more on that later.
Okay.
I attended the Eisenberg Foundation Career Day as a roundtable leader, and continue to work with IRVDA, which we're going to talk about next after this. Okay, about the use of the Enterprise Zone, which the Aldermain Road project is going to use, and the assisted living memory care is going to use, and Justine.
Yeah.
Okay, all three. Huge, huge benefit. I can't tell you enough. Like, how important this could be to us. Also attended the SBA meeting for Justine's project. So that's what I have.
Any questions?
Nope.
Dan?
Lots of questions, but she can't answer any.
Okay.
I'll move on.
All right, we'll move on to old business, and it'll be EDC 2016-35 Commercial and Industrial Incentives Enterprise Zones.
right, I'll run through this for everybody. I'll just hit the highlights of the memo I sent out. Industrial incentives, enterprise zones. It's a state-run program where basically they kind of lay out certain areas for industrial incentives to help grow industrial business. So the state only gives out 97. There are 97 total enterprises in the state. It was a program that started back in the 80s, and a lot of designated zones happened in the early 90s. Maybe 3-4 years ago, when they were all coming up, there were 25 years, or 23 years, when they were becoming expired, the state decided to wipe the whole program clean, start over, instead of taking extensions and things like that. So they wiped the whole program clean. Everybody that had an enterprise zone had to reapply. And they had been doing them in waves for the past 4 years. And there's new criteria you have to meet. There's new regulations, and they made a board to judge all these things. So actually, when I got hired on in about August, I started looking into actually applying for one along the El Domain Road corridor, possibly going in with Plano, Kendall County, kind of just understanding the process. So real quick, the new process, there are three main things to be qualified for an enterprise zone. You have to pick an area that's contiguous in area. It can't be larger than 12 square miles, and it must meet 3 of the 10 criteria that the state has laid out. And then the memo, I laid out all 10. It has things to do with unemployment rate. There's a market area, a local labor market area that you have to designate. So not just Yorkville, but it's like, okay, this is where our enterprise zone's going to be. Here's our market area of people that would come and work here. So pulling from Aurora, Plainfield, Oswego. You have to show kind of the unemployment rate in that kind of area, poverty, if there's any abandoned coal mines, brownfields, you know, things like that, vacancies. So they're looking for, you know, downtrodden areas. Enterprise zone is supposed to help bring jobs to the area. So you have to hit 3 of the 10 that I listed out here to even qualify. And then in my previous job, I had actually done a couple of these. It's a very competitive field. We did the first rounds. I had worked on a couple of different communities that were doing joint ones. You know, and we had to prove probably 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10 to really feel like he had a good shot at getting to the enterprise zone. So it's really competitive. So while we were going through all this, I listed out all the local incentives and exemptions that enterprise zones have, mainly sales tax exemption. So if I'm building a project somewhere, you know, a warehouse or manufacturing facility, as long as, if I'm constructing it, as long as I buy the supplies in Illinois, I get an exemption on the retails, the sales tax. There's other couple incentives, utility tax exemptions and things like that.
Now, that sales tax exemption is not for the contractor, the purchaser of that. It is the actual developer, builder, the person applying for the project.
Correct. So, if you're in an enterprise zone and you're building within it, whoever's building that, wherever you're getting materials from, like if I'm going to buy all the lumber, I go to the store and you get a number, like, here's my, don't charge me. Doesn't mean necessarily you have to buy it in Yorkville, but just the state of Illinois.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
You get a certificate, it's almost right, like an EIN number, but you have to list your contractors with the state. So you just can't pass your number around to,
right, right,
to different people.
Yes. Designated for who is involved.
Exactly.
On
so you list your contractors, and they get access to the benefit.
Okay. So while we're going through all this, the Upper Illinois River Valley Development Authority, which from now on I will call IRVDA, kind of sent out a message to Lynn and Christy and I. They're having a meeting. The IRVDA is like a regional authority. It's 10 of the counties up along the north end here. Kendall, Kane, LaSalle, Lake, Marshall, McHenry. They were having a meeting. We attended their meeting in October, and they were talking about doing their own enterprise zone, which we were confused by, because with a total of 12 square miles, we're like, you can't do one for, you know, 10 counties. So what they were saying, there is a little note within their, when they were authorized by the state to be a regional authority, there's a little note saying they get one enterprise zone, and it's outside of the 97 that the state designate overall. Originally, back in the 90s, they set out just one for one community. And now that they have to reapply, as they've talked to the state, and it turns out that as long as they meet the minimum requirements of enterprise zone, they get to designate it. So they really only need to hit three of the criteria, and then they have to make sure it's continuous and under 12 square miles. So what they proposed is that it would be more of a flowing, open kind of deal, where they want to establish an enterprise zone of projects that are near to being started or, you know, in the works. And, you know, these applicants would come, apply to IRBDA to be part of this enterprise zone. They would pick which ones. So IRBDA would apply for their enterprise zone, and they're running the enterprise zone. The board of IRBDA will be doing this. So what it really details out is certain businesses come, they apply to be in it, whether or not, you know, and the way they get around the continuous area to make sure, like, you know, someone in Yorkville and then someone up in Aurora and then someone in Lake County can all be in the same one. There's a minimum requirement. You have to have a 3-foot wide border between each. So they're going to go, you know, down roads at a 3-foot wide strip. When you calculate it out, if you want to go from Chicago to L.A. in a 3-foot strip, that's 1 square mile. So they're like, we can, yeah.
Wow.
We did the math in the car.
Yeah, I would have.
Because I was like, I don't believe
so
that.
From Chicago to L.A.
at three feet wide. The whole way, it's 1 square mile.
What?
5,825 feet in one direction and 5,825 feet in this direction, then you have to calculate your square area. Break that into linear feet, ends up being ridiculous.
Yeah. Huh.
So they could basically have one enterprise zone that goes all over the state.
That's basically
kind of like the 4th Congressional District. Have you ever seen the 4th Congressional District? Look it up.
Yeah. And cross other enterprise zones.
That's crazy.
Or does it have to skirt around it?
Who knew?
I believe it goes
the
right through.
We learned here.
I believe skirting around it would be a problem.
Doesn't do anything, but does.
Right, but it connects the different projects.
I didn't know if it would. If it has to go around, because obviously enterprise zones can't overlap each other.
Right.
But is this an exception to that?
I'm assuming they actually would have to go around it.
Some kind of goofy.
We can ask.
But for the most part, they were pretty confident then, as long as they're picking businesses, you know, that are going to be going, they'll be in the enterprise zone, and you have your 3-foot stretch to the next one and the next one, and kind of make a web of projects. And then they also were talking about how once the project, so the length of an enterprise zone is 25 years, it's 15 once it's established, and then after 15 there's a 10-year extension you can apply for. So let's say somebody comes in for this initial phase, they build within 3 years, they get their incentives,
mm-hmm.
And they're like, you know, we're not expanding anymore, they can be released out, and then somebody else can apply to come in. So it's going to keep it under that 12 square mile threshold. To do this, IRBDA is going to be running it. It costs a business, if they want to be in it, a $2,000 non-refundable application. That's to pay whoever IRBDA hires to do this to, you know, make all that happen. Because changing the boundary of the enterprise zone and doing all those things takes time and work. So, with that said, you know, Lynn and Chrissy and I were at that meeting. We came away pretty ecstatic, thinking, you know, it was a great thing to do. We don't have to apply for it ourselves. We don't need our own zone administrator to run it. It's also very competitive. We might not get one. While IRBDA could really help local businesses in Yorkville and through this process. So, we picked out three projects we know right now off the top of our heads for the initial phasing of the project. The Eldermain property, Justine's, go for it.
Eldermain has already put their application
yes, in, yes. And then possibly Wrigley. Now, and these are things that they could just do by themselves. If they knew this, they could just apply for it. But the city wanted to show, you know, that we support this and that, you know, we want to support our businesses. So,
the Herb de Bord actually does the approval, mm-hmm. and the Herb de Bord wants the municipality's endorsement, because without that, they don't want to have somebody come in and just apply for it. They want to make sure that they're adding value and that the municipality recognizes that and embraces the project.
Is on board with it.
Yes. And also to show that, we're on board with it, a conversation showed up that the city would split the cost 50-50 of the fee. So the city would pay $1,000. Whatever development would pay $1,000. We have a resolution set up by the city attorney to kind of state this, that this would kind of be the policy for Yorkville. That is everything. We are just looking for comments on enterprise zones. What do you guys think of this program? And then the resolution as well.
Just a question I got on some mm-hmm. of the mechanics of it. Okay, so. Herbda can say yes or no to, let's say, the dome. Or let's say the dome, just hypothetically.
They can't say no to the project. They can say no for it to having enterprise zone
right.
Status.
Status, okay. Right. And so they
The board.
Right.
Because
so,
they're lending their, like, hand over it. They're, like, giving it a blessing. Okay. I don't know how they
know. So our three projects aren't guaranteed.
No.
Or they are?
No.
They have
okay.
to. No.
That's what I thought. Okay.
No. You apply, Herbda has an application, right. They have to fill out, and then they pay their $2,000 non-refundable.
But in other words, someone else is doing the work.
Right.
We suggest our projects go to that board to get involved in this, and then they're other than the $1,000.
Right. So in our case, it would be $3,000 with the three different projects.
Right. Yeah. We set it up as no criteria other than you're in city limits. Just because our guess is that there's only going to be a handful of these every year.
Yeah.
And without having gone through the process at least once before, I don't know if they're going to pick all three, or they're going to pick one, if they're going to change it in the future. We get the feeling from talking to them that even after everybody applies, that there's probably not going to be enough projects that's going to tap out the 12
right.
square miles.
Right.
So, you know, I think people eventually, you know, understand it and start bidding on it, but even, you know, massive hundreds of acre project like Lincoln Prairie, I mean, that's a drop in the bucket compared to the
right.
total land area that
right.
they can do. So even though it's a 9-county area, my guess is they're probably not going to be turning down projects because they have too many.
Right. They just don't want it to be a project like I'm trying to think of something. I'll use it because we have one going right now. A Dunkin' Donuts drive-up.
Right. That's
but they don't.
Say.
They want it to be a job creator, something that the community needs. So, you know, industrial office,
very employment based. Because
yeah, job
that helps
creator,
with the criteria.
Definitely job creator. So, you know, I'm not trying to diss the Dunkin' Donuts. I'm just saying that's not like the purpose of this. It's more for if you had a call center, like I say, or industrial of any kind. Anything like with recreation, though, or tourism would definitely fall under that because it's economic development. Not to say that, like, Dunkin' Donuts wouldn't be, but
right.
it's like they're trying to, like, make it be definitive. That's why the thought process of the municipality being behind it or giving their endorsement, because then it's like it stands out. It's something that, you know, there's a need,
And also, there's a public hearing process
yes.
that IRVDA would take on, which is the notification and the publication in the paper. So it would be best for us to know the project and support it first before there's a public hearing about it. And
is that public hearing process local, or is it?
It takes place at the IRVDA board meeting.
It's their location.
Yes,
since this is part of their, it doesn't have to be done locally.
You don't
right.
have to do it.
They run it.
Exactly.
So we have no intention of applying for one of the 97 enterprise zones. Mm-hmm. We're just piggybacking on IRVDA.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's not like we're trying both and see what happens.
No.
Right. And this is where, in our planning, we talked about the IRVDA sounds very nice. If it does not work in our favor, there is a large number, I want to say a couple dozen or so, enterprise zones that are available next year. So if this doesn't go our way, it is potential that we would have time to explore going for our own enterprise zone.
I mean, there's only 102 counties. There's 97 enterprise zones. Shouldn't every county get one, and maybe five counties are left out of the loop?
That's all farmland. It's all county that's
supposed to be farmland. Chicago is five. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's not equally distributed.
Enterprise zones are super competitive. It's super duper competitive. And
it just seems like a lot less stressful to have someone running it.
Yes.
Right.
It just seems like more, it makes more sense.
Burdensome. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to, okay, yes, we support this. And, well, and then we stamp the development, like, yeah, we definitely want this here. Mm-hmm. So then they can take the ball and run with it. I think it sounds better than doing their own.
Well, wait, when the meeting's over.
The major difference on this is, on an annual basis or whatever the time frame is, we are putting in projects if we have developers come in that want to do this. Under a enterprise zone, we'd have 12 square miles to work with,
and that's
at
it.
Our discretion.
That's it. Yeah.
And that's it. So it kind of covers our entire city almost. That's really the big difference is right. If we have our own enterprise zone, it's ours. But to get to that point is expensive.
And from Jason's experience, and then also just with us looking at the criteria, we're 20 square miles, and the max is 12 square miles, but, you know, since it is so competitive, you know, all those criteria aren't going to be met because, like, our residency base is relatively wealthy.
Right, you know, we have a hard time meeting that. Because
absolutely.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but when it comes to meeting those three, it is an aggregate score of points in each of the categories. Yeah. So you have to meet them, but they do look at points total in all categories.
You have to meet three to get in the game.
You have to at least meet three.
And then it goes to the
and
points.
And then you exceed it, they'll give you half credit if you don't.
Just hitting the three gets you
in the game. In the door.
The judges will look at your...
Right. But then there could be people that are scoring all over the place, and we're scoring 3.5, and there's people could be scoring, nines or something.
Yeah, we could really hit something in one category that gets us in there, but then our points may just not be close.
The other thing that I did ask and got clarified is that if we were to have downtown redevelopment, and even if it was like a building that had some living area and retail or office, it would be eligible. So, because some of the projects that we could look at in the downtown could be complex, and kind of multifaceted. So, it would be a help to get some of that redevelopment done.
I think the IRBA application is the best way to go with the test.
So that all you want from us is a proof
of. If we're willing to pony up $1,000 in application.
Yeah.
Per person.
Per so it'd be $3,000
good. Yeah.
The resolution
was $1,000.
Was a policy just because, it's kind of a weird ask, and even though the dollar amount is within our authority, I wanted there to be some buy-in from City Council on it.
Well, I mean, you're going to look at the development, too, and decide, is this even viable? Should we even...
What's the rule? Anybody who applies, we give them $1,000, or do we look at them and say, we're not going to put our stamp on that?
It's open-ended right now. It just says if it's within city limits, it's within the city administrator's authority to support the application on behalf of the city, and then cut a $1,000 check. So, knowing the three that are
already in front of us. But they may have to have $1,000 as well.
Yep.
So if they're like, I don't want to pay that $1,000, then just don't.
I mean, if you're not going to put up $1,000, you're not going to apply for an enterprise zone.
So if something came in front of me that was really weird or was a controversial project, that I would bring it back in front of the board. But
Instance, if there was someone that wanted and they needed a variance for zoning and they needed a variance for this and that and the other thing, you might be like, I don't know. Would it be something?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, the Cedarhurst project is something that needs a PUD amendment.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you approve the policy, even without it having been approved, if they want to jump the gun and apply for an enterprise zone project before they've got formal approval from us,
But then are we going to pay the $1,000, too, even though they don't have, the formal approval from us?
As drafted, yes. It's just anything in city limits, I consider that to be... you know, just my eye test is like, hey, that's a pretty good project. Even if it gets shot down, you know, it's something that we would take the risk on.
Okay. So,
if I looked at something and said, it's going to be a 10-story tall building in that location and everybody's going to hate it, you know, yeah, then I might say you need to pump the brakes and basically apply to us and get approval before I'm going to cut you a $1,000 check. But it's currently within my authority to do so as drafted.
We're not going to have 100 projects coming and say, hey, give $1,000 to apply for this.
And, you know, if people don't, if it's not that big, it could potentially happen, though. You know, because you've got to be spending so much money to be able to make it worth it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not an easy process. It's a process to apply. It's not like any Tom, Dick, or Harry is just going to fill out an application and write a check for $1,000 and be done.
Yeah, right. The Eldomain project is M1 currently, and I don't know if they're going to require any agreement approvals or if it's just a building straight building permit, but that's another example. We don't even know. We haven't announced who they are yet, and they've applied.
They have applied.
Which means it'll be probably tomorrow.
I spent 2 hours with him on Friday explaining to him that, you know,
it's probably
that you do this and, you know, it's not going to happen in December, but it's going to happen in January. Technically, it's public. So, you know, think about this and, you know, it's a...
So that's another example of it being a little bit cart before the horse, at least for the $1,000. But, you know, I don't see a major issue with it.
Okay.
Just where's the board kind of headquartered out of?
So they move around because they're in nine counties. So they literally have a traveling board meeting, and literally the meeting that the three of us went to happened to be in Morris in Hardy County. But it could be anywhere from like Oglesby. I mean, if you look at IRVDA, if you pull up their website, UIRVDA.something.
Org.
I was going to say, I thought it was org. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can see the counties, and it is like, it goes to, like, it's Kane.
I was seeing it on here.
Yeah.
How many members sit on that board?
The board members are listed on there, like John Shaw from Kendall County.
I was going to say, how do you get on the board?
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure he's not on it anymore because didn't he officially, he's one of the new county board members?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so there's like different people from all the different counties that are involved.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily county board members, but it can be a county board member. It's someone that's representing the counties that are part of the Upper Illinois River Valley Development Authority.
Okay.
And Andy Hamilton has been the director. And then there's these agencies or bonding authorities that were created by legislation back in 22 years ago, whatever it was. Andy, like, they're all over the state. There's how many of them, he told us. But then he actually is the director of many of them because it's kind of like, you know, it's this is the name for this group, this is the name for this group, but they all do kind of the same thing.
Okay. So what's...
Well, there is a resolution in there that we're seeking approval on. If everybody's okay with the resolution, it can go forward to the next city council meeting, where it'll be the second agenda item.
Carl, good?
Yeah.
Chris?
Yeah.
So it's fours. Okay, that's it. And any additional business? If not, the meeting adjourned at 6:30.